morning, everybody, and welcome back to the Chad Hastie program. I'm Paul Arbeid, and this is going to be my last day to guest host. Tomorrow, I think, is Cedro Gutierrez is going to be behind the microphone talking to the folks that regularly tune in to Chad's program. And then on Friday, the news department is going to send over Matt Crow to co-host, or guest host, rather, for the Chad Hastie program. Unless you've been living on Mars lately, you may not know there's been a slight bit of discussion in the Hub City about Lubbock Power and Light. And can both of you guys hear pretty good? Okay.
Yes.
Good. Okay.
I've been turning knobs over. I've been adjusting it for
That's right. Well, at my age, I appreciate it. I think I don't. And that'll be the last time you'll be allowed to mention my age today. But anyway, there's been quite a bit of discussion about increased rates, the rate hike, and then the coupled with what was termed a computer glitch in software has caused some really expensive bills to be mailed out for this month, and has caused quite a backlash. Now, in the studio today, we have Mayor Glenn Robertson, who has, for better or worse, kind of been at the center of this issue.
Correct.
And we've got a member of the Electric Utility Board, Mr. Clayton Isom. Clayton comes from a family that has added significant growth to our community through the decades. And he is a relatively new member, about a year and a half or so. Clayton,
yes, sir.
How long have you been on the electric utility?
Right at a year and a half.
Right about a year and a half. Okay. The phone numbers today, if you want to be a part of the program, we probably won't get many phone calls.
No, not on this subject.
No, absolutely not. The telephone number is 770-5790. 770-5790. Or if you're outside the area, which I don't know why you'd want to call if you don't live in Lubbock and not an LPNL customer, but if you want to, that's okay. It's 1-800-687-0790. 1-800-687-0790. Now, let's start by talking about the rate hike. Now, Mayor, you're the one, I think, were you the lone vote on the council?
Yes.
Against increasing the rate this summer? Explain your vote against the rate hike.
Okay. You know, the first thing I'd like to do, Paul, is say what we agree on. We agree, everybody, that LPNL was going to have a rate hike. They lost $3.2 million last year, and we cannot afford to have our electric utility losing money. That's bottom line.
Sure. We've been through some of that.
We have. Now, where we disagree was on timing of the rate hike and on possibly what the consultants recommended. I was pushing and still feel like that the best thing we could have done as a council, now not as a board. Now, I am a board member, but I'm an ex officio board member. Right. I don't get to vote. But my thought process is that we could not hit our ratepayers with a rate increase in June, one of the hottest months of the year, when usage goes up. And I knew that we had been under-collecting fuel costs passed through for at least a year, and that was going to be added. So I didn't think we could afford the double whammy. I didn't think our citizens could afford it. I knew that all the rate modeling was based on an October 1 deadline, that the bonding agencies, they had mentioned in the letters that I had received that, yes, they had concerns, but that they felt confident that a rate hike in October would solve all issues. So the only disagreement we had at that point was in timing. And that's a disagreement between me and the rest of the council, not so much me and the rest of the utility board.
Clayton, let's talk about the rate hike. How did your vote go on the electric utility board? You voted for the rate increase.
Yes, sir, I did.
Kind of give us a synopsis quickly on why you decided to vote for the rate increase, placing it on the ratepayers in full force at one time.
Well, you know, I think first I know the mayor was on here a few minutes earlier, so I appreciate you having me on here, and I look forward to having this discussion.
And by the way, let me interrupt. We've got a caller already standing by. Sharon, if you'll hold on, I want to give Mr. Isom a chance to talk about why he voted for the rate increase, and then we'll start taking a few questions. Okay, Clayton, go ahead.
Yeah, I can make it real easy. I had just gotten on the board, and so I was – when you get on this board, it's definitely a pretty steep learning curve. But I did vote for the rate increase. The rate consultant that was brought in, his recommendation and the way I understood his recommendation was if the sooner we can get a rate increase recommended to the council and implemented, the less the rate increases will have to be down the road. One thing the mayor has said, and he's very right, is this recommendation from this rate consultant is a three-step rate increase. This is just the first of three steps. And so, in my mind, when the consultant was suggesting that we should get it done as quickly as possible, that was the main reason. I will say, just from my position, I think the mayor's right. The mayor is hitting the nail on the head when he says, and when he said back then, to his credit, we absolutely, I say this, I can't speak for everybody else. I did not, properly appreciate how much it was going to be. It wasn't just the rate increase all happening in the summer. You had the summer rates coming in, the rate increase we voted on. You also had a complete shift in the entire way we're billing and an adoption of a new rate model after decades of an old one.
Right.
And so,
and you had the fuel cost adjustment.
Yeah, the fuel cost adjustment that was coming as well. So I will say, just speaking on for one person, I did not appreciate how much that was, how big of an impact it was going to have
on the rate.
And I think the mayor, having done this for a couple years longer than I had at that point, I think the mayor was trying to communicate it, and I give him credit for that because he was trying to say it's all too much at one time, and truth be told, it was.
Right. That's a good point. Let's go to the phones. Sharon is on the phone this morning here on the Chad Hastie program, and she's got a question for Mayor Glenn Robertson. Good morning, Sharon. Thanks for calling.
Can you explain to me, when you talk about the difference between the winter and the summer rates, you're not talking usage, you're talking rates. So what is that difference? Because we were told we were going to get hit with a 9.7% rate increase, but I've gone on to LPNL, pulled my statements off of their website, compared the fuel cost rate, and my rate increase is 81%. And I looked at that by, when I saw that, I thought, well, I'm doing the math wrong. So I went in and I redid it. I went to websites that said, how can you measure the rate increase? You take the new rate minus the old rate, the differences. I ran it through there. It still said that. So
yes,
then
ma'am.
I went back and I took the old rate times 9.7% and added it together. Ran it through the same website, that came out to the 9.7. So why is it 81%? How big is this difference in the summer rate?
Well,
I'm not talking usage, I'm talking rate.
Yes, ma'am, and we've actually got three things we have to discuss when we talk about this. Number one is you have several different base rates, but you do have a winter rate and a summer rate. Your summer rate is about 30% higher than your winter rate. And in electricity, it's all depends on demand. And the higher your demand is, the more it costs to produce because you're having to produce much more electricity. So the industry, and this isn't just LPNL, the entire industry typically has winter and summer rates. So you were hit, and you have been always hit, with an increase between summer and winter. The second thing that happened is that the board and my council approved a 9.7% rate increase. But that 9.7, we have to understand, is simply an average. It's an annual average across all rate classes. So we've got some classes that may have gone up 20%, some that actually didn't go up at all. The third factor, and the one that really affected everybody tremendously, and it's hard for the media to explain, and the paper got it wrong the other day, so there's a lot of bad information. But the fuel cost has been under-collected for the last year, not anybody's fault. I don't think it was intentional. It's just a fact. And fuel cost is a pass-through from Xcel Energy to Xcel. And not only did the fuel cost go up month over month, but the fact that LPNL has been under-collecting it for at least 12 months, I think probably 10 years, or as long as we've been under this contract, people were hit with a triple whammy. So it's a very complex rate structure, and I think what hit the public is everybody anticipated a 10% increase. The board was told and council was told to expect $7 to $10 increase on people's bill, and that's not what happened.
No. Anything else, Sharon?
Well, I do appreciate that explanation. At least now I understand what's going on.
I think Clayton
the other thing is, why is LPNL not willing to work? I mean, it's a struggle for many Lubbock citizens already in our economy. And I've been watching, I mean, I pulled the LPNL financial statements and looked, and I noticed that their meters keep dropping and their receivables keep dropping. And I thought, Lubbock must be losing people if that's the situation.
And no, so, as a matter of fact, we're gaining people.
Are we actually gaining
people? Oh, yes, but a lot of the new growth is in areas that are not covered by Lubbock Power and Light. Much of our new growth, Sharon, is in the far south and southwest and west Lubbock, and that area is covered by South Plains Electric Co-op. You know, it's interesting to note that Glenn, how many folks are on southwestern are on South Plains Electric Co-op within the city limits of Lubbock? Is it close to 20%?
You know, it's getting bigger and bigger. It went,
right.
Several years ago, when I first went on that board, it was literally, you know, in the few thousand.
Right.
But now it's just continually, because all of our growth is predominantly in the southwest, which is in South Plains Electric Co-op's
right.
area.
We've got to take a break. Sharon, thanks for the call this morning.
Thank
Clayton, anything
well,
else you want to add?
I learned a lot.
Yeah, I think,
thank you.
Sharon, I will take one quick, and we can talk about it more. I think there's one, I came up with this yesterday finally in my head. There's one way to look at this that may be a little simpler. You know, the entire industry, not LPNL, this is not LPNL specific, but the entire industry is got really one main goal. And that is, we try to level out by doing rate modeling to begin with. We try to level out what Sharon receives in her bill throughout the year. People need to budget. You have to be able to budget. A standard residential customer will go along for 8 months, October to May, and they'll have a $65 bill. This is a standard customer. I know a lot of people are higher than that, but a standard 1,000 kilowatt hour average customer, their 8 months will be $65 a month. And they're sitting there, and then all of a sudden, that's because their consumption is 650 kilowatts. But all of a sudden, in June, July, August, or all of a sudden from June, July, August, and September, if you just had it set up to where the rates were only for what they consumed, then that average, that same customer that's used to a $65 a month bill is going to be at $150.
Right.
And so the whole reason you pay a consultant to come in, the whole reason you put any thought to this, the whole reason you don't just say you're going to pay for what you're consuming and that's it, is you don't want to have Sharon, if she's the average perfect customer, paying $65 a month for 8 months and $150 of those four.
That's a great point. Sharon, thank you very much. We've got Jay standing by. We've got Gene standing by on the phones, but we've got to take a break. Jay and Gene, can you please hold on during the break because your calls are important to us, and we'll be back in just a moment here with more of the Chad Hastie program on KFYO. Welcome back, everybody, to the Chad Hastie program. Phone calls are stacking up, and we've only got about 4 minutes before the next half-hour break comes up. Let's go to the phones. Jay, thank you so much for holding, and you're on the Chad Hastie program.
Thanks, Paul, and by the way, we miss you.
Thank you. I appreciate it. I'll leave it at that. I'm glad I'm not down there right now.
Well, for the gentleman from LPNL, Mr. Issa, I got kind of a three-part question. First of all, I understand, and the Railroad Commission states it as a municipal-owned utility that you are a part of city government. Why are you not running this like a business? I come from a business background. Before you start passing on increases to your consumer, you start looking where you can cut within. And I'm going to let you know, I've got a family member that works for LPNL. I'm not going to say who it is. The administration has grown. This ridiculous ad campaign that you're running. Those of us who live within the city limits, it's covered by LPNL, we have no choice. It's a monopoly. Stop wasting our money on that. You know, before you start, and I understand summer and winter rates, I understand that. Before you start jacking rates up, and this is the problem that I had when I was on active duty. I lived in three different cities that had municipally owned electric companies. Every one of them, the rates continually increased. That's what I voiced when this was proposed. It was a bad idea from the start. You take competition away, rates go up. Why are you not running this more like a business? Why do you feel like you do not have to answer to the citizens of Lubbock? You know, when we should be able to go to any meeting and voice any opinion without giving you a 72-hour notice. And why, I guess to me, why do y'all realize what you're doing and backtrack just a little bit and say, whoa, wait a minute, maybe we made a mistake? You never admit that you make a mistake, ever. I'll shut up and let you answer the questions.
Thanks, Jay, very much for the call.
Yeah, Jay, I appreciate your call, and I certainly understand your points. I just to hit a few of the things that you said in your comments and question. First of all, last board meeting, we finally, after several months of working on it, we did finally change the policies and the procedures of the LPNL board meetings, and we've adopted a public comment period that will occur at every regular scheduled board meeting. That you do not have to call in the rules on those public comment periods are exactly the same as a council. You can walk in, make your comments, just like the council. If you wish to have dialogue back and forth with the board over whatever issue you wish to talk about, then I believe, and the mayor could probably clarify, but I believe there's something to do with open meetings laws where you do have to you have to be posted on the agenda itself.
Correct. That is correct.
So yeah, that, and I'm a little unclear of that because actually next Wednesday, and I'll make sure everybody knows this, but next Wednesday on the 31st is our first regularly scheduled board meeting after we've changed those rules or those policies and procedures for the meetings. So next Wednesday will be the first meeting at which anybody can come in and speak to any comment or any topic that they want to.
Clayton, let me interject here. Do you think there's any traction on the utility board to rethink the rate increase and try to maybe work it in stages over the next several months, or is it pretty well chiseled in stone?
Well, I think the board realizes that they're, you know, that possibly is all too much at the same time. Now, one of the things that we can't do, we cannot roll back the entire software program because it will cost millions of dollars to try to roll back immediately. Okay. So we're limited in what we can possibly do by some software constrictions.
Good point. I'm telling you, I'm really, I want to apologize again to Gene, who's been holding on for a long, long time. We're up against a hard break. Gene, please stay with us if you can. This is the Chad Hasty Program. I'm Paul Bean. Good morning, everybody. Welcome back to the Chad Hasty Program. We're going to get cooking here this morning. I'm going to tell you, we're going to give Gene a medal because he is just, this guy has been hanging on the phone for, pretty close to 30 minutes.
Yes,
this morning,
sir, he has.
To get his question in. Good morning, Gene. You're on the Chad Hasty Program.
Good morning. Thank y'all for having me on. I don't live in Lubbock, but we're moving there, and so that's why I'm calling in this morning. And I've got the deal about the Lubbock. The mayor is not responsible because, you know, he doesn't get the vote, and he did vote against the increase. And I just wanted to say, if part of the money that they lost last year was tied up in a building project that went over budget, and assumably part of it is under undertaking of the fuel cost, then why don't we look at that as just a 1-year deal and take care of it and move these rates back to a normal rate? And I've got more and more questions keep coming up. You know, why can't we, like the first caller said, cut the advertising budget for LPNL, cut administrative jobs at LPNL, and increase the maintenance of, you know, those resistors or capacitors that blew last time? And, you know, it just goes on and on. Let's make some cuts and at least put them on the table and vote on them and give them a vote before the council and the people they represent, before we just go and make the people ask, pay the money. And it kind of boils down, you know, after all the things that y'all said, it's complicated. There's a lot of different things in here. Well, my job's complicated, and if I go to my boss and say, well, you know, here it is, this is my report, it's complicated, I'm sorry, but you're going to have to just eat it. You know, I'm not going to have any credibility with him, and I'm probably not going to work for him for very much longer. So I agree with the previous caller on that issue. It just smells bad. And I don't have that ability to do that in my job.
But Gene, I tell you, I don't have any problem telling you a couple things on as far as sitting on that electric utility board. You know, I do believe that the operation, the leadership is always focused on as lean of an operation as you can get. There are always going to be areas that can be cut. I'll tell you, right after I got on the board a little over a year ago, one of the decisions was made, and by the effort of the mayor being one of them that was pushing it, but we actually did cut our advertising and marketing budget all the way to zero. I know that's a constant source of discussion, but a couple other points that I'll say is, you know, right now there's no CFO over there. We've taken a very patient approach to hiring a CFO. And so I think there are certain areas where that we are running a lean operation. I think when you talk about rates, the one thing to remember, Paul, is everything we're doing as a board is got this huge, gigantic 2019 issue looming in our horizon.
It's the 800-pound gorilla in the room.
It is, and if you look at it, we've got to be ready from a cash reserve standpoint for a $400 to $500 million project potentially.
If we build generation ourselves at a bare minimum, $430 million.
So
that's for 500 megawatts, right?
Correct.
Basically, that's right. 500 megawatt plant.
453 is what we've got to come up with. It's I believe the proposal was for three separate generations.
Okay.
So the whole point that I was trying to make there is that our rates aren't looking to adjust for a project that went over budget last year. You know, everything we're looking at is actually out 5, 10 years. If we need to build something, put the rates in place that can be there to build the reserves that can allow us to do something, because we basically, it's like having a business, like having United, that they're, you know, 80%, 90% of their products are serviced by one wholesaler that they buy from. And they know that, I mean, that having United and having Matt Bumstead or Robert Taylor, those guys sitting over there saying, okay, in 2019, this group that's been selling us our products for all these years and sells us nearly everything we have in our store, we know in 2019 there's one reality to it, and the reality is that group isn't going to be able to give us anything. That contract is over, and there's no way to redo it.
Right. Now, you're not, of course, saying that by 2019 that we're going to need $435 million. What you're saying is the reserves need to be there to keep our bond ratings at an excellent level, so the borrowing of that money for the bonds to build a new power plant, if that's what if that's the direction the board and the council decides to go, at least the reserves will be sufficient to support a good bond rating and subsequently be able to finance those bonds.
Yeah, that's exactly right. That's what I'm saying. And it'd be like I said, it'd be like Robert Taylor over there at United. If he sat there and said, okay, we have two options, which we do. We're either going to build our own wholesaler, we're going to build our own plant to make all those products for ourselves, or we're going to go out and find another wholesaler that can step into the place of Xcel and buy from them.
Right.
And so one way or the other, we're going to make whatever the best decision is and whatever the best recommendation can be to the council and make the best decision. But regardless, we've got to have rates that look out that long term and set us up for having those two options.
Gene, thanks very much for the call this morning. Let's go back to the phones and talk to Michael. Michael's been hanging on this morning. I think Michael has got a call for Clayton Isom. Michael, good morning.
I do. First of all, to correct the rules, at least that I got on Monday from Emilio on the citizen comment, it's limited to things on the agenda, which is going to be quite limiting sometimes. The other is that there's only a period of 30 minutes, which those are different. Both of those are different from the city rules. I guess what bothers us the most and is all of the excuses, just a series of excuses, and none of them seem to hold up to scrutiny. And I went back then, of course, after the meeting on Monday where I thought there would be, you know, some acknowledgement of the problems with the city customers, actually we're owners, have. Instead of that, the focus seemed to be almost completely on how to recoup the $3 million allegedly undercharged on our gin bills. And I just thought that was very uncaring and just not even acknowledging that some of these bills have gone up 2.5 times. So I went back then and watched the May 9th complete 37 or 8 minute presentation from Gail Kring and this Joe Manicelli or whatever from this consulting firm. That's our first mistake, is hiring outside consultants for anything, particularly on price rates, because they could care less about the public. But there was no mention, in fact, it was mentioned that because of higher fuel costs was why we needed the 9.7 average percent increase, and nothing about that was only a tiny piece of this. And even the fuel cost thing does not hold up. When XL customers have not seen an increase in fuel cost, and the SPEC people, which apparently LPNL doesn't even factor in when they're doing comparisons, actually have seen bills go down, and they're expecting a rebate. So none of this stuff is washing. And at some point, you're going to have to lay all this stuff out. I have an open records request in for a lot of data because I deal in facts instead of just emotions or hyperbole, but there's just some major problems here with all of the stories that we're getting, and quite frankly, I think the council was completely misled on May 9th, because the few questions that were asked, no one ever revealed that there was going to be any other factors other than that rate increase, and we've never had fuel cost hikes like this, and it's way out of line with what the rest of the gas prices really are.
Michael, you and I have good constructive dialogue every time we see each other, I hope. But I think you're right. Emilio was very involved in the public comment questions. The public comment period and how that came forth. The one thing that I will tell you is that instead of setting a whole bunch of parameters on the public comment period, I made the motion. I know this because I did it. I made the motion and said, we are going to take public comments. We're going to follow whatever the guidelines are from the city, what they do in their public comment period. And there are some on that board that are concerned that that could turn into a really long period of time at the beginning of every meeting. You know, this board is all volunteer. Nobody's paid anything. And so there's some that are concerned about how long this could add to the meetings. And so I made the motion at that meeting, Michael. I said, we're going to follow the same guidelines of the city, let it go 2 or 3 meetings, and if we feel like there needs to be some parameters set back up on the public comment period, then we'll address it at that point. Right now, there are not a list of rules and policies and parameters on how that public comment period is going to be handled. It's just like the city.
Well, so, I got one from Emilio, so if it's different, I would like to know.
Go ahead.
And if I could throw in, Michael, and I'm going to defend Clayton here. Number one, I want to thank Clayton for coming in on this hot seat.
Yeah, you're a brave man.
he is, and I'm going to tell you, because there's a lot of anger and upset people in Lubbock. And for a board member to have the courage to do what he's doing today, I have to applaud. But I do want to defend him on this. Clayton was one that, he promoted having the same rules as the city council. That right. board voted otherwise. He was in the minority, but he did make an attempt to get that done.
Right. I was there that day, so yeah. I do appreciate that.
Michael,
I just want to clarify it, really. I can play by any rules. I just need to know what they are so right. I can let other people know.
Michael, let me make a point here about Southwestern Public Service. You mentioned that they did not have an increase. Was that... I'm looking at the figures for Southwestern Public Service for their Amarillo residential right. customers. And in May, for 1,000 kilowatt hours, in May of 2013, Amarillo was spending $92.32. Lubbock was spending $88.94. Now, that was in the month of May. Now, move forward to the month of June. Residential bills in Amarillo have gone up almost 15%. They're at $107.93, while Lubbock is at $108.74. We've historically been under Amarillo, but now we are a little bit higher by almost a dollar more per month for 1,000 kilowatt hours than Amarillo. But they did have almost a 15% increase from May to June of 2013.
Well, I've gotten some fuel costs. Things that Amarillo was for July was 325.69, you know, unit cost, or not unit cost, but the fuel right. charge, which nobody had ever even mentioned.
Well, I'm just looking at the
as a part of this, right. and Lubbock's was 72, minimum of 72, going up to 76.7 and so forth for right. that same month.
Well, all I'm looking at charge. Is the rate of increase that Amarillo residents have incurred. From May until June. You know, we've always said that Lubbock has the lowest electric rates in the
yeah,
state,
quit,
and during the month of May, we did. I understand. Hold on. During the month of May, we did, and now during the month of June, Amarillo is a little bit cheaper than Lubbock by about a dollar, and let's see, San Antonio is cheaper. So right. two cities in Texas
well,
are now cheaper.
What
but anyway, we got to take a break anyway.
The fuel cost and the transmission cost and then the cost to the city actually for electricity off this. So we get to pay two or three different ways.
Absolutely.
Appreciate it.
Michael, always, we appreciate you very much for calling in. We're going to take a break. We've got Chris standing by on the phone. We're a little late for this break. We're getting stacked up here on the Chad Hastie Show as we knew we would, folks. We're just going to have to muddle through it. Stay tuned. Be patient. I'm Paul R. Bean, subbing for Chad Hastie. Welcome back, everybody, to the Chad Hastie Program. Let's get back to the phones. Chris has been hanging on for about 2 days. Good morning, Chris. You're on the Chad Hastie Program.
At the outset, I would like to compliment Clayton Isom for not just being on this show today with the mayor, but also one of the few board members that stepped out and visited with the shareholders, the customers, at the LPML Corporate Center the other day, too.
Took some nerve, didn't it?
Yeah, it does. And you know what? That's the responsibility of serving on a board, or that's like the mayor. You step up, you run for office, and you are now responsible to answer the questions of those people that you are representing. Right. I say that at the outset. Since Michael and you guys just got through talking about the Amarillo utility, SPS, and LPML comparison, it's just kind of a chance that the other night, 41-year executive from SPS, was sitting on the front row right next to me and was at least guiding some of the, you know, concerns. And one is that when you say that the bills are comparable, Paul, you're right, but LPNL is not a profit-centered utility
right.
business. LPNL or SBS has built into that bottom line a profit. And my question is we need to compare it apples to apples. Now that we have a monopoly, you might inform the shareholders that we are now a profit-centered company. I'd like that comment, but finally I got two other things. One, I would like to see the board meetings put on Channel 2, so television coverage, so that we can all watch this and don't have to go down there every time. Because this is the most important asset that Lubbock has. It might be time to ask that, having public comment and have it videoed and put on the Channel 2. And then finally, my question to y'all is, you've said there are these two options for generating capacity, the deadline being 2019. Both Clayton and the mayor answered those of us who are considering that we sell LPNL. Why shouldn't we be considering selling LPNL if it is becoming a toxic asset? Like to hear that from the mayor and from Clayton.
Chris,
guys, I'll listen.
Thanks for the call. Thanks very much.
Let me start, and I want to address two portions of that and then let Clayton respond as a board member. But number one, this board voted when I was a voting board member before Clayton was on there. 7-2 against televising the meetings. Myself and Emilio Abeta were the only two that voted for it. I am not a proponent of selling LPNL. It is a tremendous asset to the city of Lubbock. We've got some structure issues right now. We've got quite a few issues that we need to work through. But I am convinced, and I've been the most vocal critic of LPNL for the last 3 years. But I still believe that it is an asset to this city. I think it's an asset that we need to continue to own and operate, and that our job as council and as the board is to do what we're doing right now. Have the very good, professional, calm discussions to find out what we need to do together to solve these issues and go forward. And I'm just grateful that we do have some committed board members that are willing to do that. And then I'd kind of like to let Clayton answer the rest of that.
Sure. Chris, I appreciate your call. You know, the one thing that comes to mind, you know, the reason that I think selling LPNL is not the most productive conversation to have right now is, and I, for no reason, I keep going back to using United as a comparison, but, you know, if United was fixing to lose its supplier of 90% of its products, and if United had some customer discontent, and if United hadn't yet decided how they're going to replace 90% of their products, you know, it probably wouldn't be the best time to sell that business either. And the fact of the matter is LPNL's got a whole lot of decisions to make in a very short time period. It's a big transition period we're in as the board of LPNL and as all the shareholders of LPNL. And we've got to make a lot of those decisions before it would even be worth talking about doing anything long-term like that.
A lot of folks do not understand also by reading the city charter that it takes 66.2-thirds of the voters in Lubbock to approve the sale plus one vote.
Right.
You've got to have a 2/3 vote of the citizens to sell Lubbock Power and Light. I think that'd be a tough sell. But I think you're absolutely right. I think it's counterproductive to talk about that. And I was disappointed to read where one council member was doing that. This is the Chad Hasty Show. Mayor Glenn Robertson and Clayton Isom with you this morning. I'm Paul Arbeen. We'll be right back.